This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
When was the last time you tried to wheel yourself down to Tim Hortons for a coffee? Or perhaps roll over to the 7-Eleven for a carton of milk? Chances are you faced some kind of challenge along the way if you were rolling your wheelchair down a Nanaimo street or sidewalk. Perhaps a pole stood in the middle of the sidewalk, or the sidewalk simply ended, or it was crumbling and you just didn't want to risk rolling over it. Terry Weens has captured some of his Nanaimo-based accessibility challenges on a YouTube channel. Terry also writes a blog, Poster Child Perspectives, where he posts about a variety of issues including access activism.
Terry Weens had polio in childhood, resulting in permanent disability. He was a poster child in 1955 for the March of Dimes fundraising campaign, an initiative that emerged in response to the polio epidemic among children. He was a member of the Alberta team for the first Canadian National Wheelchair Games that were held in Montreal in 1967. Later in life, he took on a series of advocacy roles. Now Terry's a senior and a grandfather. He recently documented a range of deficiencies in Nanaimo's infrastructure that present problems for anyone with mobility challenges, but particularly for people who rely on wheelchairs to get around. We're joined in the studio by Terry Weens. Welcome to People First Radio, Terry.
Thanks, Kevin, and thanks for having me.
Terry, you write on your blog, and I'm quoting, "Civil rights are the backbone of any accessibility issue. It's the very protection of civil rights that ensure all people have access to everything from buildings to service to an equal society." Tell us more about how you define accessibility.
The reason I made the reference to civil rights or human rights is that's a way to protect us. And if we can't access those things that are there in the community, how can we be active members in our community? And I really want to stress here as well that when I talk about access, it's not just my wheelchair. It's access in general. If I can't get into a building, I really need the service. So I may not have to get into the building, but I want to know I can get in there safely. When I wheel around, and that's my exercise, I don't golf, I don't mountain climb, I don't do any of the retirement things, so my retirement thing has now become accessibility. I walked on crutches until into the 90s, and I didn't notice accessibility as much then because I could go upstairs. Now that I'm wheelchair dependent, I'm much more aware of it, but I've spent the last 25 years, regardless, fighting for access in other ways, web accessibility, written accessibility. You can put a ramp into a library. That doesn't mean it's accessible to everybody. Somebody with a visual impairment, if they can't get an audio book, the ramp means nothing to them. There was just a story yesterday on the university in Newfoundland about a fellow with an audio issue where a professor wouldn't wear a certain FM amplifier so that he could take that course. That's an accessibility issue. Right now, with the elections going on, there's been more in the news about inaccessible polls. But the other thing that's inaccessible is platforms and written material from candidates in alternative formats. So if somebody that's visually impaired wants a brochure in Braille, as an example, or if they want to go to the website and have their screen reader read it, if it's done in a frame, it's not going to work. So I look at, from my perspective, the videos I take are physical because they're easy to see, but I think we got trapped in the 80s and well into the 90s too around believing accessibility was all about physical access, and it's so much broader. And it's not just getting into a building. It's if the building's accessible, there might be a job in there that's accessible to somebody with a disability. But if they can't access the building, they're not going to access the job.
I wanted to ask you about the progress that's been made in society over your lifetime in terms of accessibility. You touched on that when you said, you know, we can talk about physical access, but there are other types of access that aren't being dealt with. Give us a sense of the progress that has been made that you've observed.
From a physical perspective, I think there's been a lot of progress made in the last, primarily since the 80s. Prior to that, and again, That's because the range of disabilities has become much broader and has a lot more depth than what it used to have. It used to be disabilities were pretty straightforward. Now they're not. You know, now there's 70% of the disabled community are invisible. You don't know they're there. With the aging population, we're seeing an increase in long-term effects, for example, of diabetes. All of these little things that are changing the face of the disabled community. We're no longer just people in wheelchairs, you know, we're people that have, there's visual, there's audio, there's sensory. You know, accessing a school, and this is an issue I've wanted to touch on, because when my son started school, for example, the school wasn't accessible. It was the same year Michael Dunne, he had disappeared, and I had some concerns over them putting the youngest kids in portable classrooms. When I went to the school, and I never thought of really raising the issue of accessibility, there was no ramp into the school. So I asked the principal. The principal eventually came out to the parking lot where we met. I'm getting used to outside meetings. And I asked him, how many parents did they? He said, we have no special needs students. I said, well, how many parents do you have that may require some type of accommodation? He had no idea. And yet I knew of another couple, they were both deaf, that had their children going there. They weren't getting, what's a parent-teacher meeting to them if there's no interpreter? And you can't expect a 7-year-old kid to act as your signer for you. So there's been avenues made in some areas, good avenues. But they're also being slowly eroded away, as well as the little incident in Port Alberni with the little 5-year-old in the wheelchair at the fair this past weekend. I just went to show. These things, they need to be, you know, policed, I guess is the best way to put it. We just can't assume. It's like, yeah, the speed limit's 100 kilometers. That doesn't mean the RCMP assume everybody's going to drive that. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the radars there. And it's the same with accessibility. We can't just do it and then expect everybody's going to follow through with it. We have to follow up on what's happening with it. But we also have to get past this whole mindset that, well, there's a ramp there. There's a curb ramp. There's a curb cut there. Curb cuts, by the way, are not good for people with visual impairments because their canes can't find the curb. You know, that's where tactile strips come in. So it's much more complicated than what it used to be. There have been changes, and I'm not going to deny that. Unfortunately, some of the changes aren't keeping pace with the types of disabilities we're now dealing with.
You've recorded a series of videos that we referred to. They're posted on YouTube. You have a video, YouTube channel there that document some of the experiences you've had going around your own neighborhood right here in Nanaimo. Tell us about those videos. What have you encountered?
Sidewalks that come to an end. There's one down. I live down by Country Club Mall in that area. And I like to go out. The only way I can really exercise is go out for a hard wheel. So, and I'm good for this because I grew up in Calgary, so you guys don't know what frost heaves are in sidewalks. Calgary does. You try to get a good speed on a sidewalk in Calgary, and I've done more headers out of my wheelchair because I hit a frost heave. You don't have that here. So I find what I consider reasonably good roads with a bit of a grade so that I can get a good speed going. But when I come to, I don't know what you call those big concrete abutments. There's one up by Wendy's on whatever that mall is called there. Well, the abutment that takes you into the next part of the sidewalk, and I took my tape measure out there, by the way, just to find out, was 24 inches wide. That's not wide enough for my wheelchair. That's not wide enough for a senior's walker. That's not wide enough for a lot of people's strollers. So the curb cut that's there, and this is documented on my YouTube station, the curb cuts that's there is on a 90 degree turn. The road is a 90 degree turn that nobody slows down for. And unfortunately, across the street, there is no curb cut. So you're sort of stuck. You can get off the sidewalk on one side of the street, but you can't get back on the other side. That's one area. I've also got that on my YouTube, was I was going down a hill and came to a telephone pole that was in the middle of the sidewalk. Now, I used to work for Building Standards, so with municipal affairs. So I understand part of that. They have to be 18 inches away from the road for truck mirrors. Fine. I can live with that. Then put a little bit of extra sidewalk between the telephone pole and the other side. But that particular incident, and I caught this on video as well because somebody was filming it for me, just a guy on a bicycle came out of nowhere around me, and just as I was about to veer over, I had no idea he was there. He just about hit me. I just about took him out of his bike. He wasn't paying. He had his headphones on. One of the other areas, and this has happened to me, this texting and talking. We talk about non-distracted driving. Heck, I used to go to the malls to wheel around for exercise. I don't do that anymore because everybody's, I've wound up with more people on my lap because they're texting and while they're walking. So where technology has been a boon in some areas, it's presented problems in other areas. But there has been change. I don't want to say there hasn't been changes. It's just we're watching them slowly slip away again, and that's what I find frightening.
You met with City of Nanaimo Councillor Diane Brennan on these particular local issues, I think just a few days ago, if not last week. What came out of that meeting?
Diane, I found to be very receptive. She had seen some of the videos, and so she sort of reached out to me. And we did meet up in that area, and I did walk her around to a few of these. She has since raised this issue with city planning because she had just assumed, and I understand how this came about. She had just assumed that since this was all addressed, that things were fine. And I said, no, it's not policed. You can say it's addressed, but if it's not policed and followed up on, and it just so happens that yesterday I got a call from the city because she had talked to a planner. So I'm heading there next to discuss some of these issues with the city planner. At least they're open to discussing them. But Diane, I found, was very supportive. She's since been in touch with me numerous times about other issues because, again, I've talked with her about this as well. I want to make sure the focus isn't just on ramps. You know, I want the community to be accessible to everybody. I work with a lot of families with children with disabilities. I do volunteer work with them because none of them have money to pay me. And that's a reality of the world. But they're just learning these things. So when they have a special needs child, the challenges they face are enormous. They don't have time to be doing the type of advocacy I do because all of their energies are focused on the child, which is understandable. When I grew up, the world was different. I did 7 of my school years in the children's hospital because my longest stay in the hospital was 2 years and 10 months, you know, so because that's where you went then. There was no such thing as inclusion. I don't even think the word existed in the 50s and 60s. Up until 1972, I could be turned away from a voting booth because it was up to the manager of the voting poll to decide if you were aware enough to vote. You know, so when I see these things starting to slip, and I don't mean to be political here, but I see the Fair Elections Act is doing that. This picture ID, I don't know of a visually impaired person. I don't have a blind friend who has a picture ID. The concept doesn't even register. Why, if you're blind, would you want a picture ID? Where I have seen every Formula One racetrack, a book of every racetrack done in Braille because a friend of mine bought it so that he can feel every track there. Again, for the parents with special needs, their issues will be different than mine, and I don't want them to burn out trying to fight this.
Terry, thank you very much for coming in today. We'll have to leave it at that, unfortunately. However, we'd like to follow up with you on this, and in a few weeks, perhaps we can speak again to find out what has come out of your meetings with the City of Nanaimo. They sound very open to this whole topic. And in the meantime, you will, I'm sure, be blogging online about all these things.
Oh, yes, yes. And thank you very much again for having me. And guys, have a good fall. It's getting a little miserable out there.
Okay, thanks.
Terry Weens is a Nanaimo-based access activist who blogs at terryweens.com. That's W-I-E-N-S. You can also find him on YouTube.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, Radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.